yes, after so many weeks of endless reaction videos to Eurovision songs, we have another podcast episode. Welcome to The Embarrassing Diary. Hello, hello everyone, old friends and new friends, all subscribers, new subscribers. How are you guys are doing? It has been quite an overwhelming amount of weeks for a lot of reasons. The latest episodes have been a huge hit on YouTube. We were not expecting. I started this podcast with the intention just to have a podcast, but we did some reaction videos and it went really well. But of course, I don't want to only have reaction videos. I want to keep doing the podcast. I have an amazing guest today. Nathaniel is going to join us all the way from Sweden, although he's in the United States right now. He's a comedian, a musician, an artist, an old soul, as I like to say, and we are going to talk about creation, creativity, why laughter is so important for comedians, if everybody can be a comedian, why do we make art? Are we making art for us? Are we making it for other people? Who is the most important audience here? Make sure to click the subscribe button so that you are informed of all the latest details. And here we go, the episode starts now. Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Depending on the perspective. What time is it there?
So here it's 1 o'clock Amsterdam time. And there?
It's just past 7 in the morning.
7 o'clock in Rhode Island. So for the people who don't know you, give us a little bit of a background. Who are you, Nathaniel?
So I'm born and raised in the USA in Connecticut. And I do both music and comedy. And I teach music and I play music and I do comedy. I don't teach comedy. And I've actually never been to I'm too proud to go to a comedy class. Although I'm not against comedy classes. No.
So you incorporate both, right? So you, for example, when you have a performance, you do a comedy show and music at the same time. Do you do that?
Sometimes. Yeah. In fact, it's something I've been trying to think. I've been thinking I should do more and more. And I've been trying to do it more, actually, because I realized that that could be a niche.
When you make something, when you make a piece, and I'm referring mainly to comedy and music, who do you have in mind? Do you have in mind the audience or do you have in mind what you like? Sometimes I think they have to have a good time. But then at the same time, I have to have a good time. Because if I don't have a good time, nobody else is having a good time. But it's so hard to, I don't know. What do you think about that?
I think as an artist, any kind of artist, like you definitely have to make something for yourself. And believe in it enough that you feel like you want to share it with others. That's the main feeling I have is like, I think of something funny and I'm like, oh, you know, and I might think it's very funny at the time. I write it down or I put in my voice memo or something. And then I go back to it and I'm like, is this still funny or was it just high? No, I'm just kidding. And then if I think it's still funny or it's still worthy, then and I make the decision, am I going to perform this on the stage or not? Or put it on Instagram or whatever. Because obviously if you're going to make a TikTok or something, like that can just be a one-off thing.
I feel like sometimes you have to gauge the room temperature to see who you have. Sometimes when there are a lot of men in the crowd, sometimes I'm like, okay, I need a bit more. When there are women, I'm like, okay, I'm talking to my girlfriends now.
Now you can tell them the truth.
Exactly. And that's what I was saying the other day to a friend of mine, how different it is like to have only men crowd and only women. Men usually, and I'm talking about like heterosexual men usually, they seem hard to impress, but then you tell at one dick joke. One big joke. Oh, this is so funny. So funny. I respect you. I respect you.
Yeah. We're pathetic. That is so funny. I think it's so cool with the comedy right now that it's there are so many female comedians. It's like when I was growing up, it was so... I was born in 1980. You know, I'll let you do the math. And, you know, you could count like on your fingers like how many female comedians there were in like... In Sweden, I would say almost dominated by female comedians. Or maybe 50-50, you know, like, how is it in the Netherlands?
Yeah, we're not a lot of women. Usually in the lineups, there are like 8 men and then two women, 3 women, but proportionally the men are more. Then we have some, they're called Funny Women Amsterdam, that it's only women so that we can boost a little bit the width. It's still a disproportionate, I must say. And also
maybe, you know, I should take that back. is probably still male dominated in Sweden, but it's starting to even out.
To change. Yes. Yes. I feel that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But coming back to you, you told me before that you're a perfectionist.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of hard when you make, how hard it is for you to make art. Do you like have to wait and wait until it's super, super, super perfect? Or how do you deal with that? Or do you like, it's never going to be 100% perfect. Give it to the world.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's nice with comedy as opposed to music is that you do have to let go of the idea of perfect, because we live in an imperfect world. There is no such thing as perfect, actually. So to be a perfectionist is making life unnecessarily hard. At the same time that you have to have some kind of standard, you know, like, because there are people, unfortunately, that, or for better or for worse, they have kind of a low standard. But comedy as opposed to music, in a way, is easier to like just get an idea out and just perform it or just put it up on social media. And like, but with a song, like nowadays with music, I actually set the bar low in terms of the amount of output. I'd basically just have a goal for myself of like releasing one song per year.
Like that's
all I have time for. Like in terms of like a Spotify song, like, so if you go on my Spotify, you'll see like there is a song every year since 2008, I think. But and then there's one or two albums up there also. But like I haven't done a full length album for 10 years. So,
yeah.
But I have like maybe three albums in my head. So it's just, you know, it's a first world problem.
I know, of course. But it makes sense. It makes sense what you're saying. Comedy is different. You have to try stuff out and see if the people like it. While music, you have to, it's more internal. You have to work on it. You can't just like give something very drafty to the world. So it does make sense what you're saying. But that also came to my mind is the conversation we had before about laughter. You said something very interesting. You said that laughter is our currency.
Mm. Oh, no, like, that, I was quoting Jerry Seinfeld.
Very good line. Yeah.
Jerry Seinfeld said that in an interview with Marc Maron. And he, you know, but Marc Maron was saying, like, he's a very angry, introspective comedian. And, like, he just wants to tell the truth. He's all about, like, saying the truth to the world. And Jerry Seinfeld, and Mark said to Jerry, like, that's not really your shtick, you know, is it? And Jerry says, no, he said, my currency is laughter. If I get the laughter, then that's my pay. Besides the fact that he's a very rich comedian. that's the other thing, difference between music and comedy is on the stage, as you know, you get direct feedback. Is this working or is it not? And then afterwards, there is always the evaluation in the mind is like, was it the crowd or was it me? Like, usually it's a combination, right? Like, it's so sensitive. Comedy is so sensitive.
I like what you're saying. You texted me that and I really felt it when you said it's sensitive. And I'm like, it is? Because in my head, I was like, it's just set a punchline. But then you said something very good. I keep it as an advice. I'm not joking. What you said, you said it's a hit or miss, you said. So it's you, it's the room. It's the MC, it's who was before you, it's the day. Tell me about that. I agree much. Yeah.
I mean, MC is a huge factor. A good MC can make or break a night. And it's so much about confidence. If the comedian is confident or exudes confidence, then the audience can relax and like they're more open. Then again, you know, there are comedians that do exude like a lot of nervous energy and then like that. But as long as like it's in control, because then you can kind of make the audience like uncomfortable in the way that you want.
Yeah.
I have a character actually that's that I'm bringing back after a long time. I used to do this character all the time and it's very, it makes you cringe. You know, it's like cringy. But I do on purpose with the violin actually, because the violin is a little bit cringy to begin with. Like taking a violin onto a comedy stage is like, what's like, it's a prop, you know, prop. Yeah. It's not a guitar. It's not like a cool instrument. Yeah. So it's risky though.
Yeah. You also told me about the ukulele, which you think, you told me that's also funny. People laugh with the ukulele apparently.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's small and it's accessible. It is in a way very comedic instrument.
How long do you think that it takes for someone to be a good comedian? Do you think there's a timeline, or I don't think it happens immediately. I think it requires a lot of time. And do you think that everybody can be a comedian?
That's a very good question. Very good questions, Sarah. The first one, I think actually, you know, someone might have gone around for years and years and years developing the comedy in their mind. So actually, theoretically, they go up on the stage. They could be funny on the first time. I've seen several people go up for the first time and actually, or supposedly the first time, and be funny. But then we have no idea how long they've been working on those ideas in their brain. So I would say probably it takes a long time just to develop, like to know exactly what you're going to do. Because there's a lot of people that are like funny just amongst friends and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But that's also been developing probably over time. I mean, no one is born like coming out of the womb like funny.
Too scary.
I'm sure a lot of parents think that this is funny. And then, you know, they probably got encouraged. And in my case, I do think that I developed a sense of humor out of almost like a defense mechanism, because I was like the youngest kid in my class. I was the smallest kid in my class. And I come from like kind of conservative town. So I think I learned pretty early to like make people laugh as like a disarming quality. And then when I saw Comedy Central on TV, and I just fell in love with like the brick, you know, the when they had the brick background, like the stand-up comedians. And then eventually I moved to New York for a summer, and I got to go to the Comedy Cellar, which has the brick, you know. And then the second question, can anybody be a comedian? I think that comedy is like music and art, like some people are in visual arts. I mean, like anybody can learn to a certain degree, but then, you know, I do think that there's some people that are maybe more talented, for lack of better words, or more predisposed. You know, like I have a musical gene, I guess, and I would say I have a comedic gene, but I do not have a visual arts gene. But mm-hmm. I do think that I could take lessons, I could become better. My wife likes to, you know, because sometimes I diss my own, like if I make a drawing, like I have no confidence, and she's encouraging, she says, oh, no, it's not bad. I mean, you could just work at it. And then the same thing for someone else that's not necessarily funny, like naturally. I do think that kind of person might be a good candidate for like a comedy class, I'm not trying to diss comedy class. I sound like a jerk. I just want to say one more thing about comedy class, that I did actually learn something just from watching it was a advertisement for Masterclass, you know, Masterclass. And yeah. Steve Martin had he was talking about his Masterclass, and he actually gave a tip in the advertisement for the Masterclass, which I do use. And this is one of the best tips, and I'm giving away a secret right now, but it's a public secret, that he says, you know, when you get up on the stage, he says that most comedians say, how's it going? You know, He says, you just wasted like precious times that make that first thing funny. And I actually, since then, I completely like use that. So now I have different ways of going in, like, and try, you know, get them like right away, or give at least say something where the answer of the audience is not awkwardly good. Because if you say, how's it going? You might get people that say good in like an audience saying the word good back. It's just.
Yeah. I did a course. The teacher was like saying, try to the first 30 seconds you're on stage, try to make them laugh twice, because then they will be in condition to roll the next line. They will be more prone to laugh. However, it doesn't always happen. Huh? So sometimes you're saying in your head, you're like, that's so funny. And they don't know what they're laughing. You're like, okay.
How do you get out of that?
Yeah. Sometimes I'm honest. I'm like, okay, this didn't land well. Like, okay. Like when you're honest and you're very vulnerable, I find that people like it. And then you switch to something else. And usually, lately, sometimes if it's not funny, I'm like, okay, this did not land well either. Okay, this is going to be a hard 5 minutes, guys.
But that can be funny. Right?
That is the funny. Instead of the joke that you write, is your observation. Lately, I found it very interesting how important it is to observe the room. So I thought that comedy is like you go up there, you just say five jokes, that's it, bye-bye. But no, you have to really be present and you have to really look each other in the eyes and see what's happening. Because if, for instance, somebody, like 20 people come in all of a sudden, everybody's looking at the elephant in the room. So if you say something out of the box, like, what is happening with you guys? Like, did you come with a bus or whatever? I don't know, whatever. Everybody will laugh because everybody's thinking about that thing.
But being in the moment, I think, is incredibly important with the comedy and music. I mean, the thing with music is kind of like, it's almost like you have to be your own audience.
Yes.
Which you should be in comedy also. But then you do have the audience that's giving you the direct feedback. So it's a slightly different, I've been thinking of the word muscle. It's like it's a muscle. You have your comedy muscle, your music muscle. What were you going to say?
But it's different in a concert. So if everybody knows your song and sings along, I think this is also magical. It's also on like constant instant feedback because they tell you that they love the song, that it means something to them. So you sing along. But this is for, if everybody knows the song, that's, I think it's very magical.
In music, you know, you can do the same song hundreds of times, but even there, you still want to have an element of spontaneity, otherwise it's boring.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of artists like maybe sing the phrasing slightly differently, or maybe, and then you have someone like Bob Dylan who like completely reworks his songs. He's kind of my favorite.
He's amazing. He improvises on stage.
So you're a Dylan person.
Yes. Nice. I love that he's on the floor. Like, this is so magical. This is what, you know, yes, you can write something. It's incredible. Everybody knows it's incredible. But at that moment, you rewrite it with everybody and people feel it. Like, you're giving a gift to the people. I love when artists give part of their soul on the moment, on stage, and people feel it. People feel everything on the crowd. The crowd is very smart. I love Bob Dylan.
You know, interestingly, I don't know if you know this part of his story, but you know that Timothy Chalamet, they're making a film now. Yeah. He's playing Bob Dylan.
I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah. Huh. They started filming right when COVID hits. And then COVID came, and then they had to pause until now. And it's about the part of his life when he went from being a folk music person to more like rock, folk rock. And the town where I am right now is called Newport. And Newport is when Dylan went over to the electric guitar for the first time. And it was a scandal. Like people went, half the crowd was like booed and half. It's really interesting.
It's risky. But you have to take risks. If you wouldn't take risks, you wouldn't make the music that he makes. Mm-hmm. So I think great artists like him, they go hard. They're like, okay, I don't care. I don't think they don't care, but they're saying, we're going to try this and let's see how this goes.
And he's a very good example of someone that, I mean, you know, we can never be sure, but I think there's a good case to be made for it that he's someone that definitely says, okay, this is good enough.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, because some of the albums, like one of my favorite albums, Desire, which is with the Hurricane, you know, the song Hurricane. And there's a lot of so-called mistakes. Like there's some stuff that's maybe a little out of tune or whatever. But if they had done too many takes of each song, it would have killed the vibe.
Yeah. I agree 100%. Yeah. And sometimes you just like, especially if you have it on a recording, it's like, it's your moment. You're just flowing. And if you have that recording, that's amazing. I have to say another example, which is not Bob Dylan. I'm going to lower the bar. In Eurovision Song Contest, Greece won in 2005. And it was the winning song. And they were feeling it. You could tell that it's going to win. And towards the end of the song, somebody sneezes. Awesome. Like, you can hear the sneeze. And people thought it was part of the vocal. And it sounds so fun and cool, and it still won. So
But that made it very something alive, right?
Very, very. Yeah, I think that's what we're getting from here, like the vulnerability part. Mm-hmm. People can relate to that. Lately, also a lot of people ask me this question: do you ever get like writer's block when you don't know how what to write, either in music or comedy? And you're like, I'm stuck. I really have nothing right now. Does it ever happen to you?
I mean, my main probably not so much writer's block as creating time to be able to sit down. I feel like one of the best techniques I have for coming up with ideas is actually I bike to work on my bicycle, and I often listen to podcasts. I actually listen. There's a podcast that I actually lived down to the guys from Saturday Night Live from when I was growing up, but Dana Carvey and David Spade. They have a podcast called Fly on the Wall, when they interview SNL people, like from that time and from today. And that's entertaining. It's silly, and you know. And then I listen to Sarah Silverman podcast. There's one called Embarrassing Diary, which is very funny.
I've heard of it. It's really good.
But the thing is that if I want to make myself, or not make myself, but the creativity does come, and I've heard this before expressed in different ways, but like boredom, I think, is a great way of, so if you're able, like in my life, it's very hard to be bored because I have three kids and I'm working full time, and I have a dog. but like walks or a bike ride or something where you're not listening to a podcast and you give yourself time to think, then I think it will come. And Einstein actually said that he needed silence and just nothing to be able to come up with his ideas. So I'm saying I'm like Einstein because I'm such a genius.
That's,
and you know,
that's what's happening, right? Compare yourself to Einstein, right?
And he played the violin. He was
I have the same whenever I take my kid to school, ideas are flashing. And when I have a shower. You have shower thoughts? Like shower thoughts is like after the shower I need a pen and paper.
Yeah, that's good. Do you take a long shower?
Yes, yes. I perform in the shower. Like there's makes sense. Yeah.
This is the embarrassing part.
Yeah, this is embarrassing. But the worst thing is if you're with your kids or if you're out and you're like, oh shit, really a good idea and you really need pen and paper or something and you can't, like you're covered with food, like maple syrup, you're really, Does it happen to you? Yeah, you want to say something?
Yeah. No. Just that the silence and boredom, you know, is a great, and that's, it's sad that, you know, with the phone culture and especially with kids, you know, that they're never silent. They're always on the phone and my students and whatnot. You want to just grab their phones and put them in the woods and make them experience. That's a funny, I think I've used this on the stage before. There was a period of time when my kids were really into playing video games, including Fortnite. You've heard of Fortnite? Yeah. And we went on a walk in the woods and my son, who was maybe 9 at the time, I took him into the woods and he looked around and he said, "What the fuck is this shit? What the fuck?" And I said, this is the woods. This is a Weeping Woods," which was like a world within Fortnite. I said, "It's just Weeping. This is the Weeping Woods." Like, and he was, "No, it's not."
I'm really scared of that, like of technology getting too much in their heads.
I feel
like we were kind of the last lucky ones. Like, we have technology now, but at least our brain developed a little bit. I had the Facebook when I was 18, 19 years old. So at least it was something a little bit of. But nowadays, like it's getting too much. The attention span is, I don't know, I'm
very,
really
very,
scared.
Very dumb. My suggestion to parents in general is just like delay as much as possible. Like I wouldn't, if I had to do over my son and get to a phone until he was at least 12.
Yeah, even more if we can. I know they're going to hate you. They're going to say, you're the worst. Everybody has like five phones. Like why am I the weird one? But no, it's really bad for their self-esteem as well. They're comparing themselves with those, all of those trolls in the internet. It's really crazy.
And the filters. The filters. Everything.
Oh my God. I was just seeing that. I was watching another podcast. It was in Greek. And it was a famous woman. And she was on her Instagram account. She was putting so many filters. She was unrecognizable. It was 100% not herself. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like you're denying your identity. Like, okay, I get it. You have a pimple. You want to hide it. But if you completely distort your eyes, your nose, it's not you anymore. And we there? Yeah, it's not cool. That's not cool for anyone, even for us adults. Like I find it, I see the filter, I'm like, oh, it makes me so beautiful. And then I see myself and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so ugly now. And it's just my face. You know?
It's terrible.
Because it makes your brain think that, oh, that's better. Like, it's messed
very strange.
Up. Yeah.
I definitely use social media, but I try to keep a balance of like the real world. And then there's the social media, because some of comedians, basically their fan base is on social media. And then they go up on the stage with this confidence they have from the social media, which I'm not trying to diss on that, but sometimes it's almost like what I'm watching. Like there's this one comedian in Sweden, I might not say his name, but he goes up on the stage and I almost feel like he's a walking like TikTok. You know what I mean? Like he goes up on the stage and it's all about taking selfies with the audience and everything. Like fine, that, no problem with that. But it's sometimes I'm kind of like, is he actually present with me? Like I'm an audience member. Like, is he with me or is he just thinking about this like TikTok?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's something
I always find it strange when somebody takes, I get the YouTube, on YouTube it will look nice on TikTok, but then when they're doing it, it looks strange and it's a little bit, I won't say disrespectful for the audience, but there is a little bit, it's a little bit awkward for sure. Yeah. Like as an audience member, I want to look at you in the eyes and it's kind of like, it's actually much deeper than, you know, at the beginning I thought comedy is just you make some jokes and that's it, but it's more cathartic. People go, they want to forget a little bit and then it's very Aristotelian, I'm plugging in ancient Greek. And it's very important to have a cathartic moment through anything, through any theatrical play. There needs to be a peak so that everybody can either cry or laugh. Because by doing that, they will forget. They will kind of like relieve a little bit the pain of their lives. That is also one of the points of art. And I really like it. So if you are not there in the moment and you're like all of this, you lose this association. You lose this this connection with your crowd.
Yeah, the being present. And that's a beautiful thing about what the ancient Greek said about that. Because for them, like comedy and tragedy was very sides at the same point.
It's interesting because, for example, Aristophanes, he would make comedies and there were very tragic elements inside. And you talk about the politicians and about really bad laws that were against the women. And then he would put the comedy in. So it was kind of like George Carlin moment, like putting the truth and then make it fun at the same time.
You know, last night, my 15-year-old, he had never seen Fawlty Towers. You know Fawlty Towers? John Cleese. It's about the hotel in England where a lot of crazy things happen. It was like, it was really, really famous. Anyway, if you've never seen it, you should really see it. But these crazy things happen in the hotel. A lot of them are based on true stories. Like someone dies in the hotel and they have to hide the body, the guests uncomfortable. But it's almost always like tragic. But it's funny because comedy, I think, is about shining a light on something in a certain way that's funny. I mean, it's the comedic perspective. It's a perspective.
Then
catharsis is, I think that definitely with music also, music is like, it's very cathartic, especially to play music.
I think you gave us a lot of information about your inspirations, but maybe you can also tell us when you create something, what's your creative process? How do you start it? What inspires you? How do you do it?
I mean, when it comes to comedy, oftentimes it's just that I just spontaneously get an idea and then I just write it down. I always make a set list and I usually have like, depending on how much time I get, if they give me 10 minutes, then I'm going to have maybe basically four things. I've gotten better about not trying to do too much. It's better to like these main points and then kind of try to connect them. I do think that organization is a big part. Like I've become more organized over the years. I have all my comedy ideas in a Google document and I've put them into categories and alphabetized. It's a balance between, you don't want to have a script. It doesn't want to be too scripted because then you take away the opportunity to like let things happen. So I try to have a balance of like major ideas and then there's some air for in case something, you know, because usually oftentimes ideas do come to me and some of the funniest lines are the ones that are spontaneous.
Yes, I agree 100%. Whenever I really memorize everything, It's going, it's very bland. And then when you, I don't do it on purpose for a little bit so I can forget it. So it can be better, because then there is this magical moment that you're saying. Do you do the same?
Definitely. The magical moments are best if you allow them to happen. But then to have the you need to have the meat and potatoes.
Yeah. Yes. You do. You can't just go like naked.
Not all gravy.
But I just wanted to ask you a last question. Yeah. Since out of your whole experience, what would be your advice to someone listening right now? They are just starting their comedy journey, their music journey, their artistic journey. They don't know what's happening. What would be your advice to newbies?
I mean, I would say that one of the best when it comes to music and comedy, I mean, I do think that you need to, it is good to consume, you know, to listen, and especially to go to live. I think live is one of the absolute best, like when it comes to both music and comedy. You know, don't just sit home and listen to recordings or watch YouTube. Like, go out to the clubs, go and watch live music. And then also one of the best things I think that you can do is go to open mic. I started up an open mic in Sweden based on open mics to New York. When I lived there, I found some really, really great open mics that were actually open for anything. It was actually music or comedy and I really like the mix, because when it's only music or if it's only comedy, that's fine. Yeah. Also,
it's more free. You're not so pressured to just make everybody laugh or everybody like the song. Freestyle.
Yeah, yeah. And it was very democratic. They used the egg timer. Eight minutes. Everyone got 8 minutes.
No, they had to...
And then it was very encouraging, because they would have the so-called judges, and the judges all had signs that said 10. Everyone got a 10. it was really, and then they would go until everyone was done, and it could end at 3 a.m.
And we have the same. We also have a place where you can do a little bit of a potpourri, storytelling, music, poetry. It's really fun. I like both. I like so much, because there's no, this variety, there's not so much tension and pressure to over-deliver.
You can also, if you have a hard time, because it can be very hard to know what to do in the beginning. Like, it's like you have this desire, you really want to do something, like, and how do I make it happen? So open mic is, but then also just creating an opportunity for yourself. Inviting your friends over, or meeting at a cafe, asking a cafe, like, can I use the back room just to, like, either host an open mic or to invite some friends. Like, on my birthday, actually, I used to invite friends for a jam, music jam. And then I said, do you mind if I do some new jokes, like just a mini set, like, just for my friends? And that was great, because, I mean, okay, they're a biased crowd. You know, they're my friends. So, but you also need, it's like, if you have some ideas that you think are funny, obviously you want to do them. You want to have a good crowd. I mean, it's like, you're not going to try it for a so-called like mean room.
I found those moments. One of the best ones, last week actually it happened to me. We were in a bar and there was no crowd. It was Thursday. Nobody wanted to go. And we were just a bunch of comedians and the crew members. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be horrible. But it was completely the opposite, because everybody, it was like dissecting a joke and analyzing it. And they were so funny. Those people were so funny. And they were analyzing it. Why did you write this? Why don't you write it like this? And we ended up rewriting our jokes. And it was magical.
That sounds awesome.
Very good. And I thought that there would be a lot of competition with comedians. And there are indeed the comedians who are competitive and they're like, don't talk to me. But most of them, I've seen the opposite. Like, the good comedians are not competitive. They're nice. They want your feedback. They want to work with you. And I think it's the best way to close this conversation. Together we stand, divided we fall. We need each other. We need each other to create art. Artists need each other. And we need feedback constantly. And we can't do this just by ourselves.
Absolutely. And I think that's the case in point. And as a way to continue this conversation, because I'm not done. No, I'm just kidding. I've also noticed that in Sweden, is the more successful comedians, they're usually like more open, because they have the confidence of, like, you know, they're not so scared of like the competition. Actually, a friend of mine, one of the ones that started up the club that I helped to start up, they started up another club where the concept was like open mics, but then 2 hours, I think it was 2 hours before the open mic started, to have like a session or an opportunity for comedians to sit down and work on ideas with each other.
Wow.
So that was also cool, to just like creating that space of like, yeah, we can we can do something funny together. Why not?
And I think you can't be good at doing comedy without a little bit of self-deprecation. Like, you have to be humble to make good comedy, because if you think you're the best, then it's not going to be relatable. People like the wound, like that part, because they can feel like, oh, I'm also that person, but I'm not, because the comedian gets the bullet.
It's a common recognizing yourself kind of.
Yeah.
But thank you so much.
Thank you. I think a lot of people who are listening to this podcast are interested in comedy, but people also, it's not only about comedy, it's about artists in general who are keen on to learn how to do it. It's really nice that you gave us your input and you are here today. So thank you so much.
Carrie, and we'll be in touch.
We'll be in touch and hope to see you either in Sweden, either in Amsterdam. Either way, I think we're going to definitely talk again for sure. Thanks
Sounds
so much.
Good. Bye.
If you are still here until the end, first of all, a huge thank you for staying until here. Okay, let's say the most obvious one. Make sure to follow me. Actually, I'm the only one in the team, you know. Follow me on Instagram. I would love to wake up one day and have like 10,000 subscribers. I only have 600 subscribers, y'all, right now. Things are not going really well in there, so make sure to come follow me and I'll follow back. You know, this is how large I am, this is how open-minded I am. I follow everyone back. Of course, do not forget, we have new episodes every week and we will have another episode next week. So I'm excited to see you again. Suggest your topic, send me an email, send me a kiss, and yeah, see you next time.